On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to Tall Can Sports. Rob over there.
Hey.
Matt over here. And as promised, the voice of the Ottawa Red Blacks on TSN 1200, AJ Jakubek. How's it going?
Hey, great to be with you guys. I'm loving the beer, loving the Nita, loving the coconut. Yes. It's one of my go-tos when I go to Kraft after Red Blacks games. Yeah. I always go with a couple of different beers, but this is one of my go-tos. So you guys are bringing it.
Okay, see, and this is what it's like to have a trained professional in the house
right off the bat.
You don't even need to prompt him on the sponsor. Oh. Right? He's got that.
Hey, when you serve me beer, then there's no prompting needed.
So this episode,
and good beer, by the way, too. Like I said, not just any beer.
You know what? It's been since the late 90s, since I've gone, I don't do swill. I'm an import guy since then.
This was imported from Colonnade Road.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying, and now with the burst of craft brewing, but I've been a staunch English Isles guy. I'm a bitters, you know, John Smith, a Flowers, Caffrey's. Cream of Manchester and Boddington's. That's
a good beer.
To me, that's
let me get to
drinking.
Our sponsor here. This episode is brought to you by Nita Beer Company at Nita Beer Co. on all your social media feeds. This Saturday, July 16th, Nita Beer and Record Runner are offering up Rock and Rail, which is a great local music festival. It's at 159 Colonnade Road. Great beer, great food, great local bands. All of that going on this Saturday from noon until 11 p.m. Ish. If you want more information, you can visit. That's what it says, man. Right?
I'm with you. It's the ish. I'm big on the ish.
Absolutely. Every party needs an ish at the end. We'll kind of wrap it up as it goes. If you want more information or you want to get tickets, recordrunner.ca. If you're not interested in the festival, which maybe you should be, but if not, you want to just check out the brewery. Nita Beer Company is locally located, I guess we'll go with, at 190 Colonnade Road. So thanks to Nita, we are enjoying. Rob's got some Perfectum. AJ and I are working on Mr. Brown has gone coconuts. Some of the great stuff there from Nita. So thanks to them for sponsoring this episode of the show. Business is out of the way. But let's jump in. We'll talk a little football. Want to talk a little Red Blacks. Want to talk a little CFL in general. Right off the hop, though, I guess my main curiosity is, I know it's kind of being painted as a positive in disguise, if you want to call it that. Thoughts on the Red Blacks having a bye week in week one? I know having battling maybe some injuries off the hop, maybe it's not the worst thing with Trevor Harris being... They say he'll be ready for week one. Maybe he wouldn't have been if he didn't have the bye week. Is this
well? And to me, it's I think Harris is probably the least of your concerns. I'm looking at the O-line with McMillan and Lauzon Sagan, right?
Sure.
In terms of what's going to happen there.
Yeah, and Brad Sinopoli too, right?
Yeah.
Because and I he'll
pride,
be, he'll
pride
be
of Peterborough, ladies and gentlemen, Brad Sinopoli, Crestwood High School.
He'll be fine and ready to go as well. But I don't think it's a problem. Like the reality now is when you've got 21 weeks and three bye weeks.
Yeah.
Like if you had two bye weeks, did you want it in the first week? Not really, but it's still not the end of the world.
Well, it seems like the bye week's always a story for the Red Flags, right? Last year, having two out of three.
Well, I think that was the most ridiculous thing ever. How can you have two bye weeks in the last 3 weeks of the season?
Oh, for sure.
And it was so stupid. And here's the thing. That's it. That's exactly why there's a 21st week in the season, because they screwed up the schedule
so badly
last year. It's the worst schedule I've ever seen.
Yeah. It was.
Like, a lot of people like to complain about the schedule, and I listen, and it's like, okay, like, quit complaining. There's, like the Sen schedule.
You got to deal with it. That's
like,
it.
Oh, you had some back-to-backs. Okay, big deal.
Right.
Hockey, you can play some back-to-backs.
Pittsburgh had one more.
Exactly. Yeah. It's no big deal. So, So you had some back-to-backs. But to play four games in 18 days in football is insanity. And if you would have told me that even 10 years ago, I'd say, okay, that's stupid. But when you're there on a day-to-day basis and you see what they go through and what their bodies go through and how banged up they get, like to have four games in 18 days is just something that's inexcusable. And, you know, the league should have been embarrassed by that.
What?
And I know, and here's the thing, like Randy Ambrosi, like I really like Randy Ambrosi. Yeah. Jeffrey Orridge basically overruled his football people on that. So that's a pretty good indication of a guy that didn't have a clue, and that's why he's out.
Right.
He overruled his football people who said, you know what, this doesn't look very good. Well, you know what, tough. And so you had a non-football person basically deciding that it was okay to play four games in 18 days. And Randy Ambrosi, I'm gonna partially pat myself on the back for this one.
You're on the right side of the table, AJ. Give yourself as hearty a pat in the back as you
So I came up to Randy Ambrosi when I first met him. I said, I've got a bit of a scheduling solution for you because you've got 81 games.
Don't even tell me you suggested three bye weeks.
I'll tell you what I suggested. And they kind of ran with it in a different way. But you have 81 games in 20 weeks. So either way, no matter how you slice it, there's going to be 1 week with five games.
Yeah.
And there's nine teams. So how do you do that? And that's how every year someone gets screwed with that 3-11 or 3-12 or whatever it is. And it's not good enough. Not in today's day and age when we are preaching player safety. And so my plan to him was, okay, why don't you do this? Three preseason games in week one, three preseason games in week two, three preseason games in week three that end on the Thursday. That gives they can make their cuts on the Friday, and then two of the teams that played in week one and week two of preseason, which would preferably be your Grey Cup rematch, would play on the Sunday. And you kick off the season.
Oh,
but that's not happening though.
And then after that, you've got 80 games in 20 weeks.
Right.
So
now it fits.
He listened to that. He actually liked that. The PR guy from the CFL said, you know what, send me that. So I sent him that. And in the end, they came up with 81 games over 21 weeks, which I think in the end is fine. Because the reality is, until you have a 10th team, and I think a 10th team is coming.
Sure looks like it.
Yeah.
But until you have a 10th team, you're going to have that issue of 81 games over 20 weeks. So they made it 81 over 21, and there you go. Is it perfect for everyone? I know the players were complaining, oh, we don't want to be there another week, blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. You also don't want to play four games in 17 days.
Goddamn right.
So, like, you can't have it both ways. It's a nine-team league.
Yeah.
Someone's got to have a bye every week. So, well, what's your solution then, right? Well, so I think Randy Ambrosi solved a problem. And to get back to your original question about the Red Blacks.
You want it in week one,
You've got two other bye weeks. So is it ideal? Would you like to play in week one? Sure, but it's not the end of the world because in the end, as long as they balance out those bye weeks and don't have somebody have two bye weeks and 3 weeks of the season,
yeah,
in particular the last three weeks of the season, like last year, then no one's really going to have too much of a beef about anything on the schedule. So and in the end, it does work out. I think it is a blessing for the Red Blacks with those injuries, and in particular to your starting quarterback. Like, would Trevor Harris be ready if they were playing on Thursday night, like right. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers and Edmonton Eskimos are playing on Thursday night?
The Blue
would
Bombers
he be ready?
Time.
maybe he would play anyways.
Yeah.
But to have that extra week, I think ends up being a blessing. And in the end, I don't think it's going to have much of an impact at all on this Red Black season.
Well, when you look at, and I think their buys are in September and October, I think, or is it?
There's one in August, I know.
Okay,
that.
One in August and one in September. Then, yeah, it was back-to-back months. I like the idea of you get that first week, everybody else plays, you got Saskatchewan film, they got nothing on you, right?
Yeah.
To me, I like that option. If I'm Ottawa, you have the heel up from training camp, you're scratching your head and you're not agreeing with that?
I don't know, to be honest. I don't know. Well, like, you can go both ways, right? I mean, yeah, there's no film on what you've done in week one or anything like that, but at the same time, you've got guys that haven't played a regular
right.
season game.
Versus so guys who played live fire action.
To me, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. And any complaints, the reality is, for the most part, any of these types of complaints, whether it's Guy Boucher complaining about too many back-to-backs or
hashtag the system.
Hashtag rest is a weapon.
Yeah, don't get me going on that. So,
hey, I'm a Senators fan. This man over here,
as you can see on the wall behind me,
staunch Leafs fan, right? This is so.
Try not to walk out.
Makes for good radio, man.
Well, we'll both punch him in the neck. Is actually what's going to happen here.
Most Sweet. Times, it's like the only time I would say, it's a schedule loss.
Yeah.
Like, because to me, that's an excuse. And so, like, whoever wins or loses Ottawa, Saskatchewan in week one for the Red Blacks is going to deserve to win. It's not going to be because of the schedule or a bye or this team didn't have film on this team or this team just wasn't ready. Like, it's you know what? Two teams go out and play.
Yeah.
Who's better? That's the bottom line.
Well, and until
the only time that I think it was a legit excuse was that 18th day when they played in Toronto last year and played that fourth game and they lost by a last second field goal. I thought, you know what? Like, maybe that's the difference between Ottawa getting to a Grey Cup and not getting to a Grey Cup, because if they win that game, and maybe it turns out completely different anyways. But
for sure,
but if you flip it right now, maybe Toronto's 8-10 and Ottawa's 9-8-1 and Ottawa ends up hosting the East Final. And maybe they host Toronto and end up losing to Toronto, and Toronto wins the Grey Cup anyways. But so that's the way sports goes. But that was one where I thought, and Ottawa wasn't good enough last year anyways, and that's a story for a different day. But the bottom line is that should never have happened, and that's the only time I've ever really felt that is a schedule loss. And that's what happened when they played that fourth game in 18 days last year in Toronto.
And that actually is these are the types of things that get talked about in preseason. We don't have anything else to talk about, right? It all gets talked about, you know, this and that and scheduling. And I know the defense is the sexy talk, right? The changes there. I'm interested in picking your brain on maybe what hasn't changed on the offensive side of the ball, right? When you look at the change on the defensive coaching side, they kept Jamie Elizondo. You still have Moses Madu. You still have Powell. You still have Harris. You still have Sinopoli, Ellingson, Spencer. Inconsistent at times that offense last year, right? And as somebody who watched all the home games, right, at times I was left wanting more. Now, I know Harris wasn't there all the time, and we took in a Hamilton game where Drew Tate played the whole game, but are you comfortable moving forward with that offensive setup that Elizondo is gonna call a good game?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I look at the offense, I mean, there's a lot of continuity there, and you talked about it, from the O-line to the OC to the skill players to the starting quarterbacks. So you've got a lot of continuity there, and to me, it's about, like, that group needs to be better too. But that's yeah. forgotten.
The whole group, or the line itself. What are we talking about?
I think the whole group.
Yeah.
Offensively.
Yeah.
Like, to me, with the talent there, it should be an upper echelon offense in the league,
and yet
they were a mid pack offense. And to me, like last year, Ottawa was an average team or a mediocre team or whatever you want to call it, because both sides of the ball were equal.
Yeah.
And to me, the offense was the part of the team that let things down, because to me, the defense.
That was kind of always going to be what it was going to be, right? Like
I they were too young. They were too inexperienced.
Yeah, yeah.
You can argue that they weren't aggressive enough, and maybe that's why
pressure.
They made the change that they did, bringing in Noel Thorpe. But
and he's flat out said, we will be more aggressive.
Oh, for sure. Right? Yeah. For sure they will.
Yeah. On the defensive side of the ball.
But on defense, like I didn't expect much from the Ottawa defense last year, and the Ottawa defense did about what I expected.
Sure.
The Ottawa offense last year, to me, was a disappointment given their talent. And so can they take that next step? And that might be the difference between them being a serious contender and just being an average team or a playoff team. Because I do think the defense is going to be a lot better, both with the difference in mentality, scheme, and mainly personnel. You need players to win. And, you know, that's been an area the last 2 years where a lot of veterans have gone elsewhere because a lot of the money was going to the offensive side of the ball. And so, you know, that was an inexperienced group. And now you bring in A.C. Leonard and you bring in Rico Murray and Luches Purifoy and Kyrie Saber and Josh Johnson. And all of a sudden, this is a veteran group that has athleticism, has aggressiveness. And again, I think this team on the defensive side of the ball. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I wonder, and I wanted to ask you, right, when you say veteran, sometimes it's a nice way of saying old, right? When you look at some of the guys that have been brought in, do you worry that they might be a step too slow, that they might be ready to fall off a little? Like, Guibert, to me, is a guy that you start to...
I think Guibert's the Larry Murphy of...
Guibert's like the Henry
was a Leaf
Burris
fan, you can understand why
defense,
I don't like that.
Right?
I
mean,
but like, Larry Murphy, two-time Stanley Cup winner.
Not in Toronto, man.
But the older you get, sometimes the smarter you get, and you need to work less, right, in terms of being positionally correct.
I'm not finding any kind of comparison in my head between Kyrie Saber and Larry Murphy. But no, I think he's a defensive Henry Burris in the sense that
– he's going to lead that unit.
Number one, like I asked him, like, what about, you know, what makes you play at as high a level as you've ever played in the CFL? I mean, he was an all-star. He was one of the best defensive players in the league last year. He's 37 years old in a league where guys turn 30, and you kind of wonder, okay, is he on the back nine? And it was the same with Henry Burris.
Well, so don't crap on my Larry Murphy reference.
How much, like, we probably thought. I'll be honest, I was one of them. When Henry Burris signed here, okay, well, what does he have left?
It was a name to sell tickets.
And
right?
A smiling face.
Well no, but yep. I think they realized as well, yeah, that's part of it, but they realized, obviously, the football people said, this is a guy that has some football left in him.
Right.
And so if you would have told me he had that much left in him, what we saw in his last 2 years, and in particular in 2015 when he was healthy.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, he was sensational that year. He won the MOP.
Right.
Well, over 50 completions. I was
40
at that
years
game,
old, man. And he wins the MOP. And here's Kyrie Saber. Same thing, defying the odds. And the reality is, yeah, he loves McDonald's. He says he loves McDonald's. And but he's got a nutrition coach, and he's
can
got
sit
all
on this side of the table.
Yes. Yeah, well, or this side of the table too. Have a fantastic friend with me in Lithuania,
right there in downtown Vilnius. Kyrie Saber, AJ Jackson.
So here's a guy like he's taken his workouts to a different level. He's taken his nutrition to a different level, and he's also got good genes, right? That's the reality. And so at 37 years old, he's as good as he ever was.
Right.
And you've got that leadership ability. So I'm not concerned at all with what he can bring. And again, I think he's that coach on the field. And they lost a lot of leadership on that defense in particular.
Yeah.
In the course of 2 years. And now you bring him in, and he is like definitely that type A alpha male. All you have to do is watch practice, and it's like, okay, he's the leader on defense. Sure. Like, boom. Like, you kind of thought, okay, well, it might be Tank Reed, or it might be this guy. We're good leaders, right?
Yep. But
when you watch this team and you watch them practice, it's like, he's the leader. He's the guy. He's going to be the guy at center for the coin flip at the start of the year with Trevor Harris and whoever else they determine to be their captains. And not that that means anything, but he's the guy. And so I think they lack that for sure.
Well, see, and I'm gapping on, he was here before. Am I right with that?
Renegades, yeah. 04 and 05. Okay.
It was that far back, right?
The last Renegade.
Yeah, he's the last Renegade in the league.
Okay. And see, to me, you can never have, and we talk about it in hockey all the time, right? You can never have enough leaders, right, to bring a quality character guy back, right? I think that's, even if he has, at 37, you're saying he's as good as he's been, but if you're a quality guy and you bring character and you're solid positionally, you can't have enough
there's
of those guys.
There's always a spot for you.
Yeah, there's always a spot for you, no matter what your age is,
that's
right?
That's why he's playing at 37 years old. I mean, he's defied the odds for 5, 6, 7 years still playing.
Before we branch out into the rest of the league, I wanted to ask you about kind of coming out of that second, and I know there's been some roster moves since then, but that second preseason game, the kicking game was kind of clear as mud. Have you made any more sense of how that's going to shake loose? I know just earlier this week, it's been kind of a topic of conversation. Where are you going to run two guys out instead of one this year? You know, how that's going to look?
It'll be two.
Yeah. They're doing two. Yeah, they're going.
It looks that way.
It'll be Lewis Ward kicking field goals and Richie Leone punting and handling kickoffs.
No.
And I think, like, Richie Leone is a known quantity.
Right.
And, I mean, this is a guy who was an all-star for BC 2015, 2016. Goes down, was on the Arizona practice roster last year. And, I mean, he's just got a booming leg
right.
when it comes to punting and can be a difference maker. I mean, you wouldn't think that a punter can be a difference maker, but we've seen it in this league.
We've seen it here in Ottawa.
With Swayze Waters, we saw it. Like, there was a game.
Maybe my favorite football name ever.
Swayze Waters?
It's right up there.
It's
not bad.
But Ottawa lost a game because of Swayze Waters. Yeah. Like, there was a game in Toronto. It was the game where Brandon McDonald took the penalty at Rogers Center.
that may have got him.
Well, there are other things as well. But
all right.
That was kind of the last straw.
Public consumption, ladies and gentlemen.
But he took a stupid penalty, and Toronto ended up winning that game. But if you think back, if at that game, and you look at the punting averages, Swayze Waters was, I think, averaging over 55 yards a punt. And I think it was Andy Wilder at the time. I think that might have been his only game as a Red Black. A lot of different punters.
Man, there has been a pile of
the old revolving
door. For sure there has.
Red Blacks. And he was in the 30s. Yeah. And so, and in terms of net, I think it was like,
when you're giving up 20.
Well, exactly. It was, and they both punted the ball about 6 or 7 times. And the difference was basically 20 yards a time. And so when you factor in the field position for 20 yards each time, that's a huge difference. And Richie Leone is one of those guys, and there's a reason he was an all-star for 2 years. He can be a difference-making punter. And there's not a lot of guys that as good as Brett Maher was as a punter.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say he's a difference-making punter. I'd say he was just a good punter.
Yep.
He was good.
Yep.
Like, Leone can be a difference maker. So you've got that. As long as Ward can be consistent and hit from 45 and in, right?
Yep.
Nail everything from 45 and in. If we get something from 45 plus from you, hey, perfect. Yeah. But if we don't, that's fine.
Right.
Then I think from that perspective, you've got a pretty good combination.
For sure.
See, and I listened to you and Lee Versage on TSN Weekend, right, when you did an interview with Marcel Desjardins, where you were talking to him and you posed the question, and you actually, as a pro would do, you spoke about Richie Leone's consistency.
Well, that was the one thing.
But and obviously I understand, right? Didn't press Marcel on that. You said when consistent, when hitting the ball consistently, nobody hits it better.
Yeah, and that was the thing at camp. Like, at times he wasn't consistent, but this is a guy, like, it's not his first year pro, right?
No. Yeah.
So when you've got a guy that's a 2-time All-Star in the league and has that much of a leg, you're going to give him a little more leeway, right? And
for
so
sure.
The preseason game, for example, I mean, he had punts of 55, 55, 53, and then the other three, I don't remember what they were, but the other three weren't good kicks. They were shanked off the side of his leg, and
which we've also seen here in Ottawa.
And they ended up getting favorable bounces and were 30-some or 40-some, but they weren't good punts.
Yeah.
But when you A, have that leg, and B, also have that track record and experience, then you say, okay, you know what? Let him work out his kinks, and hopefully that is just something that you can live with. You can live with one or two of those every once in a while.
Sure. Yeah.
Especially when you've got somebody who can be such a difference maker. Yeah. It's if that's really the only thing that would prevent him from being an All-Star again is if for whatever reason he couldn't find a way to just kick it clean every time. But hey, I'm not a punter, so I don't know how that works. I've never punted in my life other than like the odd time.
I'm a killer from inside 15 yards.
You're in the field and you're just punting for the heck of it.
This is it.
We're going to take a break right there. We will be back in just a second. We'll talk to AJ a little bit about the rest of the CFL in just a second. We're back in. Rob over there, AJ, Jackie back as well. Spent a bunch of time on the Red Blacks here because that's kind of the local team. That's what we're into. They kick things off Thursday, June 21st at TD Place. There you go.
Sorry about that.
Nope. Always welcome.
You don't ever have to apologize for cracking a beer.
That's how these things go.
But usually it's, I like to wait for their little silence, but.
In case you missed it earlier, you can give us a follow on Twitter at TallCanAudio, Facebook.com/TallCanAudio. Support the show at Patreon.com/TallCanAudio. Follow AJ at AJ on Sports. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about, the rest of the league. I suppose the biggest story coming in has been, Johnny Football down in Hamilton. I wonder if there is anyone in the league who's gone through training camp in a more unenviable position than Jeremiah Masoli. Everyone wants to see the other guy, right? I kind of wonder how this is all going to play out. Johnny Manziel has said everything and done everything as well as he possibly could from a PR perspective. Is there any chance that Hamilton finishes this season without Johnny Manziel as their quarterback? It kind of feels like this is inevitable, doesn't it?
Here's the thing. Jeremiah Masoli is a good starting quarterback.
For sure.
Like, he's top six in the league. So you're elite guys. You're true elite guys.
Yeah.
Are Mike Riley,
oh, yeah,
Ricky Ray, yep, and Bo Levi Mitchell.
Yep.
Then you're
secondary.
Solid 4 to 6 guys in the league in whatever order are Trevor Harris, Matt Nichols, and Jeremiah Masoli. And so this is a guy that came in and almost saved their season last year when they were winless.
For sure.
We watched him here, live. He performed quite well.
He was 6-4 last year as a starter. So this is a guy that can win football games. And when you've got teams like Montreal and Saskatchewan, who I think has probably the best roster outside of the quarterback position, but that's the most important position.
Sure.
And even BC, I mean, Travis Lule looked great last year, but, I mean, he's coming off an injury, and he's the number two guy, and Jonathan Jennings had a terrible year. And so you don't know where to rank those guys. Masoli is a top six quarterback in the league. So I think the plan in Hamilton, and I could be wrong, is basically let's ride Masoli. Let's work in Johnny where we can. If there's problems, if Masoli's not playing well, if Masoli's playing well and they're winning, to me it's a no-brainer. If you're they start 6-4 this year, you're not gonna in week 11 all of a sudden say, you know what? Here's Johnny football for the hell of it. So if Masoli's playing to the same level and winning games, he's gonna be the starter. But you have to have in the CFL and in any league, you have to have a good backup. And so I think they'll probably tailor it different than the typical backup situation where June Jones talked about it this week about how the fact they're going to look at it as a situation where they're going to give their backups, as he said, but this is really tailored for Johnny Manziel, more reps in practice than they would normally give their backups. So, and I think that's the right approach. And so I think a lot of what, like everyone's asking, do you think Johnny Manziel is going to be the starting quarterback by the end of the year? Well, it all depends on circumstance. It's not this set plan to have Johnny Manziel be the starting quarterback by the end of the year.
But do you wonder if there won't be a media pressure, a fan itch to
Media pressure. Where's the media pressure coming from? If there's media pressure coming,
820 Cham in
Hamilton. It's coming from the United States, and they're not going to be too worried about media pressure. Fan pressure, like the fans in Hamilton just want to see their team win.
Yep.
And so, and the other part of that is they sell out.
Yes.
They have a 24,000 seat stadium. It's much like Ottawa, and they sell out. So it's not like there's going to be pressure to like sell more tickets. This isn't Toronto or Montreal
it's just
or Vancouver.
Really unique, right? To have a backup with this. With this level of,
what has he proven in this league
nothing.
Yet?
No, right? I'm with you. Nothing at all.
And look, he's got. There's a lot of tools there. Sure. He's looked good. It looks like based on his attitude, which, you know, I think he's handled it very well so far. Based on his attitude, based on his skill set, he's got the opportunity to be a very good player in this league. But he's still year one.
Yep.
Even Doug Flutie threw more interceptions than touchdowns in year one in BC. So I think this is beneficial to Johnny. Johnny doesn't have to come in and be the guy right away. He can come in, learn, adapt. He's got a guy in Jeremiah Masoli who's, you know, from all accounts, doing whatever he can to help Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, seems like a good teammate. Right?
And at the same time, this is a guy who also had some battles off the field as well, which is why he ended up going from Oregon to Ole Miss. So perfect scenario. And we'll see. It's all going to be dependent on what happens on the field and what happens health-wise for Jeremiah Masoli. But if they're winning games and Masoli's healthy, Johnny football is not going to be the starter. Sure.
But what happens if they get out even just as small 0-2? Will there not be a...
Well, they play in Edmonton and Calgary the first two
weeks.
They're
going to be
0-2.
They're going to be 0-2.
Well, they could be.
I
think Hamilton's going to be much improved this year, but...
Well, Hamilton was strong at the end of last year. To me, they finished quite well last year.
It's not going to be based on two games. I guess, here's the thing. Three of their first four games are on the road, and they play Edmonton, Calgary, Saskatchewan. Their home game's against Winnipeg, which would be a lot worse if you weren't playing Chris Streveler, and who knows, maybe Chris Streveler is going to be the second coming, but Streveler's the first quarterback to come right out of college into the CFL and start in week one since Anthony Calvillo in 1994. And Calvillo, Hall of Fame quarterback, he struggled that year in Vegas.
And not only right through into Hamilton, right? He was giving it up in terms of his interceptions to touchdown. The ratio was not great, right, in those early years.
Hanging around in the East, I know you wanted to ask about...
And I just wanted to, just in terms of finishing that, right, and again, as I touched on earlier, right, I talked about, I'd heard that interview with you and Lever Sage and Marcel Desjardins, and you brought up that same point. I think a lot of people who are sort of neutral to the Johnny Manziel story, right, they go, how much would it suck to be Jeremiah Masoli? You're playing behind Zach Collaros, his big contract, right? And you finally get that spot, right, where I'm going to be the guy, and then you bring in this sort of well-known
Sideshow.
Sideshow, but NCAA, a Heisman Trophy winner, right? Guy drafted by the Cleveland Browns. Yet, as you suggest, right, that Mazzoli had his own troubled past, right? That he left Oregon for a reason, right? And so found his way to Ole Miss, did his time, that he may, in fact, be the most understanding guy of that situation. I think the problem is I think a lot of people who are very passionate about the CFL, right, who feel I want this league to be respected, right? When you talk about the number of NFL guys or the highly touted players, you know, the Andre Wares of the league, of the world who come up and
Troy Smith.
Troy, yeah. And they end up here and they think, I'm just going to dominate this chump league, right? And
well, Mike Riley is much.
But where I wanted to go with this was, and to me, it was so eloquently stated. Lindley, and his first name escapes me.
Ryan Lindley.
Ryan Lindley, who was doing his little blog and everything at the end of last year for the Grey Cup. And somebody on air at TSN 1200 said to him, what have you found, right, as a guy who's done his first year in the CFL? What have you learned as a guy who comes in here thinking, yeah, I'm going to own this league, right? And he said,
It's hard.
And he said, and you got to humble yourself and you got to put in the time and you have to learn it. It's not just like riding a bike. It's more like, you know, riding a unicycle in comparison, right?
It's still football, but it's a different game depending on the position you play. There's certain positions that are easier to transition to than others. Like, for example, if you're a running back coming up to the league, right, it's not as big a
hit the hole
transition as it'll be if you're a defensive lineman, sure, or you're a DB dealing with a waggle for the first time, or certainly nothing more than quarterback, because
right,
you've got different looks thrown at you. You've got an extra guy on the field. You know, like, everything is so different. You know, that wide side throw,
a country acre at least worth of space to look at.
Yeah, like that's something. I don't care how big an arm you have. When you're making that throw, that's a dangerous throw.
I'm going to step up. Thank you.
So I think that's why I think this is the best scenario for Johnny Football, is the fact that he doesn't have to be thrown to the wolves. Right. And maybe things change. You know, what if Masoli gets hurt in week one or week two and all of a sudden he's thrown in there? And then all of a sudden he's thrown in there and he's playing Calgary and Edmonton.
Yeah.
And
fuck.
Good day, son.
and that could be, you know, that's a lot different than playing Montreal in preseason, yes, right? So
for sure
it's we know how tough and how different this league can be compared to the National Football League, but I also, like, to a certain degree, I do want to see him have some type of success, right? Because I think it's great for the Canadian Football League to have the attention, and the more eyes that are on this league where people can say, because, you know, there's those fans from Baltimore, for example, that come up to the Grey Cup every year.
Oh, that's awesome.
There are 20 of them last year, and I got to meet them. And, you know,
that's so cool.
I'm not a big believer of, like, you have to love the CFL or the NFL. Or, like, I just like football. I like the CFL.
For sure.
The NFL. I like college football. Yeah. I like football. And it's different from the American game, but it's still awesome. And I think there's a lot of people that are Americans that – watch the CFL, and it's like, this is awesome.
Well, I mean, heard CFL, you just the other day on the the Wood Cookie Sawcast. The guys based out of California love the Red Blacks.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. And here's the thing, like, I mean, they love football in the United States, right? I mean, like, it's like
football,
hockey is here,
for
right?
For sure.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
And the thing is, CFL draws better numbers than MLS does on ESPN.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so,
good.
Now you look at Johnny Football, and how many more people are going to watch? And to me, that's good. That's good for the sport. And so, from that perspective, I do hope he has some success. I just hope it's not against the Red Blacks.
Well, there has to be a reason why Chris Berman continues to give it the Grey Cup
picks
a little plug at the end of his at the end of his deal, yeah.
And with Johnny Manziel, it's not just the ESPN crowd, it's the E crowd, right? Like that he's a celebrity at this point for being a celebrity, right? And so there's going to be cameras, there's going to be whatever going around. Before we move out of the East, the Argos have made some interesting adjustments. You know, there was some talk going into the Grey Cup last year, whether or not Ricky Ray, if the Argos won, whether that would be it. He's back.
And they've gone out and they've selected the most coveted.
Yeah.
In terms of James Franklin, right? As somebody who's seen, who's been on the front end of that Henry Burris, Trevor Harris deal. Yeah,
very similar type scenario.
Right.
Two-year contract and paid starters money in year two.
Do you like the Argos this year? Do you?
Yeah,
How do you see the East shaping out? I mean, we know what Montreal is kind of going to – it's probably
three-team battle. I don't think much of Montreal. They just they don't have a quarterback.
Right.
And that's where it starts. And I just don't think they're going to be very competitive. Like, I think you've got eight competitive teams and Montreal is a step below. BC's the other team that I don't think is going to make the playoffs, but I think they could. Like, I don't see Montreal making the playoffs. Now, the beauty about the CFL and the beauty about sports, right? I mean, how many people would have picked the Ottawa Redblacks to make the playoffs in 2050?
Right.
I thought they were going to be a lot better. I thought they were going to win. I remember saying at the start of the year, I picked them to win, I think, 7 or 8 games.
12
just because they lost so many close games in year one. But Montreal, like, they didn't lose close games. They were terrible. And they still don't have a quarterback. So how is this team all of a sudden?
Oh, that's crucial.
How is this team all of a sudden going to battle? Like, there's no weak sisters around the league when I look at it. It's like, okay, who's your eighth best team? Well, probably BC. Well, Montreal's playing at BC in week one, and I give Montreal no chance to win that game, which means Montreal's going to win. You watch.
Okay, I was gonna say, that looks like BC starting out at 1-0, which I think is what you said on the show on the weekend.
So you've got Montreal, who I don't think is going to be a factor, and then I think all the other I think Toronto's going to be better just because it – I think they've got a top three quarterback in Ricky Ray. They've got some great weapons. James Wilder Jr.'s got a chance to be something special. And I just think having Mark Trestman, he's the best coach in the CFL.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good coaches in the CFL, but he is definitely the best. I mean, he's been in the league 6 years. He's won 3 great cups. And that's a team that I think most people expected to be a 5 or 6 win team. And he got them to 9 wins.
Yeah.
Well, and they came in. After the draft, I believe, they sort of came in late. Trestman and
Jim Popp.
And Jim Popp, right? They came in late, and they turned that team from nothing to something, right?
Exactly. And then Hamilton, you know, they won 6 of their last 10, and I think we saw – and it was surprising that they were so bad out of the gate last year.
Yeah.
But I think they partially quit on Ken Austin, and so now you've got June Jones, you've got Jeremiah Masoli, you've got a pretty good roster, so I think – they're going to be better, and I think Ottawa, based on their defense being better, is going to be better as well. Can they find a way to win the close games, and can they find a way to win some games at home?
At home, as a season ticket holder says, can we win some at home? Sorry, Matt, one more thing. I'm interested in that very tricky and that very contentious crossover.
I'm picking no crossover this year.
Okay, and I'm wondering about with Nichols and a little bit of issue.
That's my call, because when I was looking to do my predictions, I was having a hard time. I didn't even consider Montreal. I considered BC.
No one does. In anything,
but
really.
Jennings was so bad last year that, like, I don't know what he is right now, and I think that's a big concern if you're BC. And the other thing is, I hate to say this, but I wonder if Wally's lost it a little bit.
Well, Wally's not back, is he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
there was a big swan song at the end of last year. One more year for Wally.
He's got another one.
And so,
I may have been swayed by the whole, this is going to be Wally's at the end of last
year. And I love Wally Buono. I think he's the best coach all time in the Canadian Football League.
Marv Levy takes his huge umbrage with that.
That's provocative talk.
Wally Bono was the best coach in CFL.
Fair enough.
You can argue Hugh Campbell because of those five Grey Cups for sure. But, I mean, Wally's longevity and his success in multiple spots.
You don't think even Don Matthews?
Don
wants
Matthews
to talk?
Is no, the guy I'm no, trying to. Is the guy no. I'm thinking of?
No, yeah. I'm going Wally over Don Matthews every day of the week.
Okay,
but I wonder. Like to me, last year they should have been a lot better. And you looked at that. There was the game. They were in the locker room, and that's where you love the access that TSN gets.
Right.
And I love it, but that one locker room day where he was basically saying that we're not ready and they weren't ready and they got blown out. I can't even remember who they were playing. And you're kind of wondering, like, have they checked out on Wally a little bit?
Right.
And so, and again, that might be completely off base, but that's where I'm kind of like between that and with Jennings. Okay, now we're down to seven for six spots.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, okay, I think Ottawa's going to be better. I think Hamilton's going to be better. I think Toronto's going to be better. And then you've got Saskatchewan, who's got the best roster in the CFL, but do they have a quarterback? I guess we'll wait and see.
Yeah.
Can he stay healthy?
Edmonton's a playoff team. Winnipeg, to me, was a playoff team before the injury. And Calgary, I keep waiting. I think Calgary's overrated the last couple of years. I think they win a lot because other teams make mistakes, not because they're that good, so to speak. But the reality is you keep waiting for Calgary to drop off, and they don't drop off. So I kind of thought, is this the year Calgary's going to drop off? But then when Winnipeg had that injury, and you're saying, okay.
You see Durant kind of wait. Raise his hand again.
I might
be willing to come back.
But if you give me another one more signing bonus would go a long way to getting me into Winnipeg.
No kidding, not a good situation. But here's the thing. I mean, they've got a great cup caliber team in Winnipeg. But if all of a sudden Strebler can't get it done, and the other guy that they've got there can't get it done, and you get to week six and they're 1-5,
right?
Like. Okay, Ottawa was able to bounce back from it, but are they really going to be able to find a way to get to 9-9 or 10-8 just to get into the playoffs? And if they do, then they'll be as dangerous as anyone to win it. They're actually my pick in the media poll. Here, how crazy is this? This is basically how tight I think the league's going to be at the top this year. I picked Winnipeg to win the Grey Cup over Ottawa in the media poll.
Okay.
Holy shit.
So you're hoping on Matt Nichols.
Well,
I'm not hoping on anything.
In terms of the pick. I mean,
now that the season's starting, I'm not picking Winnipeg to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like,
maybe lock in that pick too early.
Like, if they had Dominic Davis for the first six games or Darian Durant for the first six games, then I'd probably say, okay, you know what? They can probably withstand
it. Just hold on.
Because there's so many other good teams, because the West is –
yeah,
so strong, and because they have somebody with zero CFL regular season experience starting,
and that's the
season.
Problem. Anything you brought in now to replace him doesn't know the playbook, right? Doesn't know what you're running, and
you've touched on it, and I failed to bring it up in the Red Blacks portion of this. Dominic Davis, honestly, with Nichols going down, would they not love to have him?
Oh, 100%.
I'd love to have just about anybody.
But to me, short of what Dominic Davis has done on the field, you listen to that guy, to me, that's the kind of guy, again, we talk about what seems like quality character guy.
I'm surprised Winnipeg hasn't gone out and made a trade because this could be like...
You can't wait.
They might be the best team of the year. They might be the best team in the league going into the playoffs.
Right.
But if you're 8-10 because you went 1-5 to start the year and you don't make the playoffs, well, you can't win the Grey Cup. So I can't believe they didn't find a way.
Yeah, they don't want to go.
You know what? We'll give up a first round pick and something else so that we can get a quarterback that can come in.
You don't want to go through Edmonton and Calgary on the road in the playoffs.
I get it. A lot of teams, I mean, if you're Ottawa, you're saying, no, thanks, but no thanks. Yeah, but we need our depth. But there has to have been at least some scenario where they got somebody to listen. Because, again, And maybe this guy is going to be the second coming of Ricky Ray, right? Coming out of Sacramento State and looking fantastic.
No.
But for the most part, I mean, we're talking about Johnny Football and how well is he going to be able to adapt?
Yeah.
How well is Chris Streveler going to be able to adapt out of the University of South Dakota and his first year, not only in the Canadian Football League, but his first year pro right out of college, right out of Division I AA?
Okay. And help me out. Who was there? Was a defensive line guy, renegade, wore number 99. Honestly, he had to be 300 pounds. He was a South Dakota guy. Honestly, little ball of hate. Honestly, he was.
Oh, you're talking about he was, Josh Ronick.
Yes, different guy. Sorry, not 300 pounds. But was Josh Ronick was South Dakota State? Okay. Yes.
Oh, South Dakota State.
Yes, that's where I was going with that.
Well, this guy's South Dakota.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah.
Big rival then.
Yeah. You know what? AJ, producer guy, let's cut that right out of here.
For sure. It's... Why don't we, as we wind this thing down, why don't we kick it out west just a little bit? There's been some talk that maybe Calgary, with some of the moves they've made, might have the best receiving core in the league. Is that a little controversial? To you, Edmonton looks like...
I love Edmonton's receiving core.
Saskatchewan, the cuts they made this week looks like a who's who of 3 years ago, right?
Chad Owens,
Rob Bagg, right? Like, it's been...
Cary Grant, yeah.
Yeah, like, they've made some big moves. How does the West shake loose for you?
Very good teams. Again, top through bottom. I've got BC at the bottom, but BC's a wild card to me because they still have some pretty good talent there. You know, you've got one of the best players. To me, Brian Burnham's the best receiver in the league, and I still think Solomon Alabimian is the best linebacker. So right off the bat, you've got some game changers.
Solid pieces.
On that BC team. Can Jonathan Jennings go back to the Jonathan Jennings? If Jonathan Jennings is back to the Jonathan Jennings of 2 years ago,
sure.
That's a playoff team.
Yeah, yeah.
So that could be a good football team, but I've got...
If I'm back to my weight 8 years ago, I'm a healthy human being. This is a long way to go, man. That's not how this works. Right? Yeah.
BC, I look at like they're not a bad football team. I'm just going to pick them as a 7 or 8 win football team that just misses out.
On the X factors being consistency at the QB position and coaching.
So then you've got... four other teams. And again, Winnipeg to me was potential Grey Cup team. And maybe they still are, but they're going to have to tread water.
You got to go 500, right?
Two and four. Even if they can go 2-4.
Yeah, okay.
And find a way to go 8-4 in their last 12.
Stem the tide a little bit. Wait it out. Get your guy back. But that's tough sledding.
But I'd be worried that they're going 1-5.
Yeah. And you're out of it.
Or even worse. And... you can be out of it just like that. Edmonton, I don't see too many weaknesses on that Edmonton team.
I'd like to see really Winnipeg's schedule, though, too, right, in terms of you'd hope that if they're going to go 1-5, if that is going to be the case, that it's against some of those better teams, right? You'd hate to have the schedule backloaded. And I haven't looked at the Blue Bomber schedule. But if they end up having... It stacks second half, right, in terms of your schedule strength.
Well, they get Edmonton in week one, so that's not going to be easy one.
But that may be better, right, in terms of if you're going to go without your starting QB. If that's going to be a loss anyway, right, you might as well do that early.
I guess that could go either way too, right? So Saskatchewan, again, I think real good in a lot of different areas.
Yeah.
Good enough to be a playoff team even without – good starting quarterbacks, but your starting quarterback right now is 12 straight losses in Zach Calero. Yes. So if you get 20...
I heard that stat today.
If you get 2015 Zach Caleros, then you're laughing. You probably have the best team in the league.
Right.
Daron Carter in practice fights 1.5 over-under.
Over.
Okay, under. AJ's a good guy. Look at that.
But I think
he's got credentials. I don't have to worry about
this. This is it. Sorry about that.
But here's the thing. I mean, again, I just don't know like to me, this is probably a team that should win it with a real good quarterback, 13, 14, 15 games. But with Zach Caleros of the last couple of years and Brandon Bridge, it might be a 10, 11, 12 win team. It's still a playoff team.
Yeah.
And then, so that leaves Calgary. And again, Calgary, look, they're always good. I imagine they'll be good again this year, but I think Bo Levi Mitchell's going to have a better year. I think he was okay last year, but he just had to be okay because they were strong in so many areas. And again, teams just seem to – I don't know what it is. Teams just seem to fall apart against them.
Right.
For whatever reason. Calgary doesn't make a lot of mistakes. They're not like – they're not this like physically imposing team that – that is so much more dominant than other. It's not like the 96 or 97 Argos or the 89 Eskimos or the 95 Baltimore Stallions or the early 80s Eskimos. Like, this is not this juggernaut of a team, and I think that's why they've lost back-to-back Grey Cups.
Right.
But they find a way to win games because they let other teams make mistakes, and they just don't tend to make those mistakes. So based on that, you know, I'm picking Calgary to not be as good, which I say every year, but kind of an 11-win team. Like, I'll say Edmonton 1, right. Calgary 2.
Yep.
You know what? I'm going to go Edmonton 1, Saskatchewan 2, Calgary 3, actually.
Hey, nice. You'll make our Western correspondent quite happy with that. Yeah, you'll love that.
So as we wind this down, I'm going to get all three of us to give a Grey Cup prediction. I mean, I know it's nearly impossible at this point in the season. I'll go first. Give me Edmonton versus Hamilton in the Grey Cup, which would be awesome for Edmonton, obviously hosting the thing. So
I'm going to go Saskatchewan, Toronto.
Okay.
Edmonton, Ottawa.
Love it.
Oh, look at that guy.
Okay. And our Western correspondent may yet convince me to fly out there if Ottawa is going to be in it. Yeah. So there you hear it. Grey Cup predictions. Things kick off on Thursday night, week one. The Red Blacks have a bye through to week two. Thursday, June 21st, down at TD Place, if you're interested. As we wind this down, thanks again to Nita Beer Company for sponsoring this episode of the show. You can visit them at nitabeer.com. Also, this Saturday, June 16th, Rock and Rail between them and Record Runner. Awesome festival. All kinds of local acts going on. Great food. Great beers being poured by Nita. You can check out all of that and get your tickets at recordrunner.ca. AJ, thank you very much for joining the show. Really appreciate it. And that's it for this one. Give us a follow at Tall Can Audio. Follow AJ at AJ on Sports. Patreon.com/Tall Can Audio. Great stuff. We'll catch you on the next one.
This one's empty. For more, visit tallcanaudio.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at tallcanaudio.